This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It's Bob, Dave, and Moore here on 710 ESPN Seattle, an abbreviated Friday edition of the program. Appreciate everybody tuning in. For those of you that were listening to the Mariners intra-squad game, pretty cool to hear actual baseball going on and watch some of it on YouTube. It was all reminiscent of days gone by when everything was normal. So we'll talk about that. We've got news surrounding the Seahawks and Quentin Dunbar, which is not good, guys. We've got a reporter coming on at 5:30, and we're actually trying to get the reporter that wrote the actual story on this whole thing. But we were going to have Manish Mehta come on and talk to us about, you know, what was going on with Jamal Adams and the Seahawks' interest in Jamal Adams and all that. We may still speak with him, but Mora is efforting the author of the story that that just came out surrounding Dunbar. And I don't know, Dave, Jim, have you guys had a chance to go through it? It's a long story.
Yeah, I'm going through it and just kind of, you know, at the point where they changed their testimony and whatnot. But
let me tell you, let me do a Dave Wyman here and say read it all the way to the end. It's all bad news. The end.
Yeah, I know. I mean, this is bizarre. It's like an episode of Miami Vice or something. And, you know, and a lot of people, when that happened, they were texting in on our text line saying, oh, it sounds like somebody got paid off. But, you know, that seems to be what this story is about anyway. And, you know, and I guess the most jarring thing I read is that there was video.
Yeah,
there's video where in an elevator where with a huge bag of cash.
Yep.
So, man, my first thought always, though, is for the Seahawks. And I was like, go Trey Flowers. Trey Flowers is going to get a lot better this year. He's going to have a good season because, man, this looks pretty bad. And as good of a player as Quentin Dunbar is. And again, we talked to people at the Washington Post. We've talked to people around the program, guys that knew him and played with him. And there was just nothing to indicate that that he would be part of something like this. So, you know, when it was you know, refuted, and we found out that, oh, maybe that they everybody recanted on their testimony, thought, okay, well, good, that sounds more like what he's about. But this is pretty damning. We'll see how it plays out. But I don't know about you, Bob. When I got about halfway through, I'm like, oh, he's done.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I mean, this New York Daily News story by Pat Leonard, it sure puts into doubt whether Quentin Dunbar ever plays for the Seahawks, and we'll see how it all plays out. But, yeah, we naturally had suspicions when all of a sudden these victims were saying, hey, wait a minute, this didn't play out this way, this didn't really happen, and it was the very next day. And you're kind of going, well, okay, which story is it? Were they telling the truth the day before or the day after? And so the word fishy came to mind right away. And so, yeah, you automatically thought, well, I wonder if these guys got paid off. And this story in the New York Daily News, again by Pat Leonard, suggests that, yes, they were paid off. Now, we'll see. I mean, you always got to throw the allegedlys in there with this. But the thing that kills me the most out of reading this story and speed reading through it, like Evelyn Wood here, Michael Grieco, the guy that was on with John Clayton.
The attorney.
Yeah, the attorney for Quentin Dunbar making the rounds, saying all these different things about it's very important to make sure people know that Quentin's innocent. He's going to walk away from this exonerated. He called the witnesses, Michael Grieco called the witnesses scam artists. Where you know, from what I read here, it might turn out that Michael Grieco's a scam artist. So it's, boy, there's a lot of twists and turns in this. And now maybe we know why Quentin Dunbar hired another attorney to represent him, because he might not be able to have Michael Grieco represent him in this case.
Well, I wouldn't think so, because all of this took place at Grieco's office. The payoff all took place at his office. If you read the story, he went down, got the four witnesses from the lobby, brought them up to his office, the bag in the elevator. All of this is on video, according to this story. They got search warrants to access the iCloud accounts associated to Baker and Dunbar, and apparently that turned up a long exchange between Baker and one of the four alleged victims, you know, the back and forth about being paid off. And it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous, and yeah. and we'll see what comes of it. But if the New York Daily News, which isn't some you know kid in his basement's website or you know little blog account, this is a legitimate news source. So you look at this and just go, oh my goodness, man. And it's not surprising. And I retweeted it saying this is bad news, but it's not surprising news because of the complete about face that we saw. And Dave, you referenced people, you know, texting in and we all kind of had that thought, like, well, wait a minute. You had four people say, yep, it was him, and it was him, and he had a gun, and he said this, and he did that, and it was definite and without hesitation or gray area. And then the next day, those same people said, nope, wasn't him. I don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, what? Wait a minute.
Yeah, come to find out they were paid $55,000 to recant.
And what's weird is they all got different amounts. True. And they got, yeah, according to the story, it's weird. One person got 30 grand, somebody else got 20, and then one other person got 5 to split between two people. You know, yeah. So it's kind of weird how they divvied up the money. And but, yeah, ultimately it was $55,000 worth of a payoff to four different people to say, change everything you just said. So I would imagine if, and you got to throw the big if, but if all of this is true, that the attorney's in trouble, the four witnesses are in big trouble, and then Dunbar and Baker are in trouble. There's a lot of trouble here. None of this is good.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know if Dominic Johnson, he seemed to be the guy that was like the sort of facilitator for it. And he was a guy that was known by these guys. They call him Coach, I guess. But Baker and Dunbar knew him since he was a child, since they were children. And I don't know if he knows a lot of players through, youth sports and football and things like that. And so it sounds like he was kind of the guy that was coordinating the whole thing. So he's probably going to, you know, be implicated in this and get in trouble as well. So, it's just a bizarre story. And I don't know how you guys felt. I felt like, I guess I was too naive. And this is one of the things, Jim, I know you say I'm skeptical because you don't ever want to be hoodwinked, right? You don't ever want to be a guy that was like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to go along with this just because they're telling me. But I like to, you know, give people the benefit of the doubt for sure. But this is one where I was like, wow, maybe if this is all true, maybe we should have seen this coming. But but overall, I mean, it's a bizarre story. It really is. It's a guy who, you know, I don't think has had any other problems, Quentin Dunbar, and seems to be a good guy and made a huge mistake. And it sounds like he's going to pay for it.
Well, it's just so strange. And you wonder what the motive was with DeAndre Baker and Quentin Dunbar if they, in fact, committed this crime. And, yeah, you always have to put the asterisk of, you know, if and allegedly. And, you know, what you don't really know what's what in this whole thing. But maybe the motive was we learned early on had something to do with a card game, or maybe there was cheating, or they didn't like the way their money was taken. And so then you wonder, OK, well, were these victims, alleged victims, why did they change their story? OK, they were paid off. Well, did they ask for the bribe, or were they basically pressured into taking a bribe? And you know, this story in the New York Daily News sounds like more of the latter, that they were pressured into it. And that's, I don't know what's worse and what isn't, but I'm looking at that going, well, come on. I guess you know what it comes down to is, like, when you're trying to piece all of this together, if I'm John Schneider, I'm just saying no mas, man. No mas. I don't even care what's what anymore. I don't care what comes out of it. Quentin Dunbar isn't that good. I don't want him on my team. I'm going to go with Trey Flowers. We thought this would be a good deal, getting this kid from Washington, sending a fifth-round pick there to Washington for him. But we don't need our defense to improve this much to go through this rigmarole. I mean, what a joke. I mean, the whole thing is a joke, honestly.
It really is. I mean, I would advise people to read the story. It's in the New York Daily News. I retweeted the links out there. If you're on Twitter at Bob Stelton, you can read it. But it's a long story. There's a lot of back and forth. They've got the quotes from the text messages going back and forth. And again, it says there's video of the payoff, video of people looking in the bag, taking out large sums of money, video in the attorney. It was Dunbar's attorney's office where it all took place. And it's just awful news, man. And
the victim sounded like they were threatened. They feared for their safety.
Well, and maybe they're just saying that because they don't want to be pop for, you know, lying to the police, changing their testimony, yeah, and accepting a... Who knows at this point, Jim? I mean, who knows what anybody's motivation was in any of this other than a couple of guys that lost their cool for whatever reason, made a massive mistake, realized it, and tried to buy their way out of it, just to simplify the whole thing. And then you got an attorney who's right in the middle of the entire thing, apparently, who sounds like he's a scumbag. So it just, man, it's a bummer because you look forward just to talk about who he was on the field, what he was going to bring to the table, and you just felt like he had some depth, even with Trey Flowers. Even if Trey Flowers lost that spot, Trey Flowers was depth there, and we're talking about building from the back forward, and Jamal Adams maybe is a part of that. I don't know if this changes their pursuit. Maybe this led to their pursuit of Jamal Adams. Maybe the Seahawks had an inkling that this might be heading that way and thought, okay, we can live with Trey Flowers. We believe he'll take that next step, but let's shore up what's behind him.
Yeah, I would totally think so. And, you know, if you want to go back, I mean, Quinn Dunbar was a fantastic player, but...
Yeah, hey, Dave, let's pause for a sec. We've got the author of that article with us from the New York Daily News, Pat Leonard.
Perfect.
Is with us. Pat, we appreciate you jumping on with us on short notice. Thanks so much.
Yeah, you got it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, this is a great story you've got here in the New York Daily News. It's fairly lengthy, so I was trying to summarize, but for our listeners that haven't had a chance to go through it yet, if you could sort of, you know, in a concise way, tell them what you uncovered and how it pertains to Dunbar and Baker, and none of it sounded good.
Yeah, essentially it's a search warrant that is a matter of public record now in the Broward County Clerk of Courts office in Florida, and it's filed to obtain information from the iCloud of DeAndre Baker of the Giants and Quentin Dunbar of the Seahawks. But in it, the evidence that's presented in order to acquire that access reveals some pretty damning evidence and information that allegedly show a payoff cover attempt orchestrated or overseen by a witness in the case, Dominic Johnson, who told police that he's known Baker and Dunbar since they were children. And it actually includes video evidence. And this all occurred on video at the office of Dunbar's attorney, Michael Grieco. And it shows Dunbar's attorney, this is according to the warrant, shows Dunbar's attorney, the four alleged victims, Johnson, and an unnamed person with a bag full of money going into Grieco's office. It contains testimony from the four alleged victims that they were paid off a total of $55,000 in order to sign an affidavit that, as you guys know, recanting their testimony from 2 days prior. And, you know, so it was one guy got paid $30,000 or said he did. Another guy said he got paid $20,000, and then two guys split $5,000. And in addition to that, it also contains a ton of incriminating information from the Instagram accounts of Johnson, the witness who oversaw the alleged payoff, and even DeAndre Baker from the Giants. But Johnson essentially spells out that he paid these people off, that he got them. At one point, he says to say them boys. Didn't have anything to do with it. So pretty alarming stuff coming out of this case here.
Well, Pat, tell us how you came about this information. How'd you get the scoop on everybody, I guess? I mean, this is one of the more sort of jarring articles that I've ever read.
Yeah, no. Well, listen, I mean, you know, being that I cover the Giants and that Baker is a first round pick, and a young man who, you know, this happened, you know, a few months ago. And so the biggest stories around this team right now, especially because they're not in contention, have been a lot of off-field issues. So it's been DeAndre Baker and what happened down in Miramar in this incident, Aldrick Rosas and what happened in California. And then really it's, you know, new coach Joe Judge, what happens there, and Leonard Williams as the franchise tag. So I've been spending a lot of time and resources on my reporting connected to this. And as you know, a lot of time has passed as this investigation has occurred without any formal charges being filed. And so, you know, perhaps it was because this type of information was being gathered in order to make the case. But how did I come about it? I came about it, you know, like anything else. I mean, every squirrel finds a nut, but you know, you try and ask the right questions, and
really in legal matters, at least, you know, and I'm learning on the fly too. I mean, this is a lot of this, being a sports writer, you cover some of this, but it's not your daily job. But I think the key to it is to follow the facts of the case. And, you know, if the facts point to someone's innocence and the facts point to that someone didn't do something, then that's the story. And if the facts point to something salacious or shady happening and there's evidence of that, then that's where the case goes. And so I think just covering it honestly in that way gets you to a point where hopefully you just try and get to the bottom of what happened, regardless of whether someone's guilty or not.
Well, Pat, did it trigger with you right away when you heard the initial, you know, the guy saying, yeah, this happened, and then the day or two later saying, no, it didn't happen at all? I mean, is that what triggered? I mean, because that had fishy written all over it.
Oh, yeah, highly, highly, highly unusual stuff. But, of course, at that point, you just, you know, a lot of people, and there were, I know there were people in the legal profession who right away called that out and said, this doesn't happen. How could that have happened that quickly? But of course, really, you know, it's innocent until proven guilty. And so even if you're curious about something like that having happened, you know, there's nothing you can do until there's details to prove it. I think part of the reason this may be moving along too is, you know, now we're getting to a point where these guys like Baker and Dunbar, you know, were seeking or and obtaining essentially permission to travel, even though this case was ongoing. And so, of course, that leaves everything hanging in the balance. If someone is traveling with all of those restrictions with a case and details are murky and no one knows whether they're going to be traveling and then pulled out of camp and then called back to the state of Florida, and, you know, will it get thrown out? Will it not? You know, I think the gathering of this information in the case brings you to a point where maybe there's a little bit more certainty about where it's going. But certainly this is, even though this is an explosive, you know, search warrant with a lot of detail, you know, this is still a part of the beginning of this. Though I did just report, I know you guys obviously being in Seattle, but I did just report also that a couple of unnamed team sources with the Giants told me in response to this story that they would not expect DeAndre Baker to be on their team much longer. And that is something that is expected from my point of view based on the details in this. However, it is, of course, alarming in the NFL when a team especially trades up into the first round to get a player and trades a few different assets. In fact, they made a trade with the Seahawks to come up into the first round for DeAndre Baker. And having cut him, which is what could be right on the, right around the corner here from them officially doing it, is of course extremely alarming and rare in the NFL.
Pat, have you gotten a sense of what the next steps are in this entire thing? I mean, it just feels like, as I read it and I was telling these guys before they got through it, I'm just like, yeah, to summarize a long story, the attorney sounds like he's in trouble. It sounds like the four witnesses could be in a lot of trouble and Baker and Dunbar in a lot of trouble. I mean, this it couldn't be worse for anybody. Nobody comes out of this unscathed, do they?
Correct. Right. Like you have to think, okay, Grieco, the attorney, has to be in trouble and there's got to be a case involving him down the road. Dominic Johnson, the witness who oversaw the alleged payoff, who's on video as a part of it, who also witnessed or the victims at the scene actually told police that he took and hid one of the cell phones that would have been an evidence from one of the suspects at the scene. So you have to think that he will be separately prosecuted as well. And of course, you know, the direct connection, like in Baker's instance, for example, the fact that he is sending a message the same day of the payoff to Johnson, essentially saying, let me just give you the exact wording so I don't put words in his mouth. He says, I'm in the city now getting cash, how much to bring. I'm trying to get there to you ASAP. And then also the warrant says that after the payoff occurred, that Johnson, who oversaw the payoff, called Dunbar when it was done. So there's at least a record of a phone call there. And so details like that specifically tie Quentin Dunbar and DeAndre Baker to the scheme like this, not just that it was surrounding them, but that they are actually, there are words on a piece of paper, you know, written by or said by them, which of course I'm sure will be debated in the court of law. But
those direct details that tie them to a scheme like this, or even connect them closely to a scheme like this, of course, you know, even no matter what the legal consequences are for them, I think, as I just said, in the Baker situation, I can't speak on exactly how the Seahawks are going to proceed with Dunbar, but I know in the Baker situation, I think that indicates how these teams normally would move when details that incriminating come out, is at the very least, maybe somebody loses the benefit of the doubt in that sense. The NFL, I can tell you, you know, I asked them about it because I know they've been investigating as well. And they just said the matter, this matter is still under review. So, of course, the NFL can mete out its own discipline on guys, regardless of what has happened in court, and even if there's nothing's been ruled yet. So that would be another step to look for, too. What happens first? You know, does the NFL suspend players like this indefinitely, whether the teams cut them or not? Do the teams just preempt the NFL and cut the guy? You know, I think the Giants seem on their way to move no matter what the NFL decides. We'll see what the Seahawks do as well, because, of course, there will be more information in this case, I'm sure, but this is just the latest.
Pat, you know, we've talked to a few guys that knew Quentin Dunbar, one of his old teammates. We've talked to people that have covered him. Nothing to indicate that, you know, that he would be capable of something like this. What about DeAndre Baker? You cover the Giants. You know, what was there any indication? Is this a total shock?
No, it is not, unfortunately. Let's say this. He has a pattern of behavior that would not be qualified as satisfactory. And, you know, that can be how he conducts himself on the field, how he conducts himself in the locker room, his lack of study habits, but also his habits when he's away from the facility. And, sometimes people are able to, you know, I don't want to say get away with things, but sometimes people believe they are invincible and live that way. And of course, that is a dangerous way to live and a dangerous way to be. And I know one of his attorneys said right after this happened, something along the lines of that he'd been, I don't know if he said scared straight, but essentially had been given some clarity. And, you know, hopefully this is a time for him to have a wake up call. But I think that statement implied the knowledge that a lot of people had, even prior to the draft. I know there were multiple teams that had him flagged for, like, work ethic issues. You know, I know there were people who were disappointed in how he worked out for the combine prior to the draft. And, of course, the Giants still believed in his ability. But, no, unfortunately, there have been flags with DeAndre. So, you know, hopefully this young man can turn things around. But for right now, it looks like he's in a deep mess, and like I said, I wouldn't expect him to be on the Giants much longer.
Yeah, you know, yesterday, Pat, I saw a tweet that Dunbar had hired a second attorney to defend him, and that was another, you know, where I thought fishy came to mind again. But how far were you into your reporting and investigation when you heard that?
I knew that a few days before somebody reported that. And, you know, listen, it's not like I'm saying that happens all the time, but in this case, you know, I was on it. I was basically trying to figure out why. And, you know, this warrant does not speculate on that at all, but I think it won't surprise me if people speculate that the hiring of a second attorney this late in the game could be related to the fact that Quentin Dunbar's attorney of record in the case has been shown to allegedly be complicit in a scheme of this nature.
Pat Leonard of the New York Daily News has been our guest here with Bob, Dave, and Moore. Pat, we really appreciate you jumping on with us last minute. Thanks so much. Great job on the story. And we'll see how this thing moves along. Thanks so much.
Thank you guys for having me on. Take care.
There you go. There's, again, Pat Leonard, the author of the story that just appeared in the New York Daily News, talking about video evidence, Instagram, direct messages, testimony showing a payoff cover-up with DeAndre Baker and Quentin Dunbar, and it's just all bad news. We'll continue with conversations with writers from the New York Daily News, because we had already had this scheduled to talk about Jamal Adams, and maybe there's even more urgency on a move like that now, seeing as it looks like, just off the surface, Dunbar could be questionable at best, but Jake Heaps broke that news that the Seahawks were looking into Jamal Adams yesterday. So how did the Jets feel about trading Adams? And what kind of a locker room guy is he? We're going to ask Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News. He's going to join us next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Well, news surrounding the Seahawks, not great as it pertains to Quentin Dunbar, but maybe there's some good news in terms of a move that can be made with a player the caliber of Jamal Adams. And we'll talk to somebody who knows a thing or two about Jamal Adams. He's also of the New York Daily News, and he is with us. Manish Mehta is here. Manish, how are you, sir?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
We're doing good. We just got done talking with your coworker there, Pat Leonard, talking about that story. So we'll see how that plays out with Quentin Dunbar and Baker and that whole mess. But Jamal Adams has been a big story out there and certainly around the league. He's made it clear he wants out of New York. He had a list of, what I think, about seven teams that he'd be willing to go to, the Seattle Seahawks being one of them. And there was some uptick in attention out here. Our very own Jake Heap saying he's talked to some people maybe affiliated with that organization, perhaps, that said Seahawks are most definitely burning up the phone lines in that order. What do you think? Do you know much about the Seahawks' interest or what's gone on between the two teams to this point?
Well, I would be surprised. I guess I should preface this by saying I would be surprised if the Jets general manager, Joe Douglas, traded Jamal Adams. Obviously, Adams isn't particularly pleased with how things have unfolded this offseason, but we're talking about a 24-year-old, two-time Pro Bowl player, 3 years into his career, a guy who's clearly the best player on the roster. So I don't think it makes much sense from a Jets perspective to trade Jamal Adams unless Joe Douglas gets really an offer that he can't refuse. He's certainly not going to sell him for 50 cents or 75 cents on the dollar. So I don't think he's going to be moved. That being said, of course, teams like Seattle would be interested. I think you can make a fair case that half the league would be interested in getting Jamal Adams. But I just don't think the team is going to move him unless, again, they get an offer that just blows them away.
Yeah, Manish, I was looking at watching him play, and I see the C on his chest, and only in his third year, so he's a captain. His dad, here's how old I am. I played against his dad, who was a running back in the league. It seems like just a great leader, too, and everything. Good, great kid. When did it turn south? Is it just simply the money, or are there other things about the Jet organization that made him want to get out of there?
Well, it's definitely not just about money. Now, look, obviously he wants to get compensated, so to frame this and saying it's not about money, that's not necessarily accurate, but it's clearly not all about money. It's really about the poor communication between the franchise and the player. The last 5 or 6 months have been particularly odd, given the information that I know that has happened behind the scenes. It's peculiar that the organization would take this tack with their best player. I just think that when the communication isn't clear, when it becomes muddied, that's when the frustration initially begins. And then things kind of bubble to the surface where you get a player like Adams asking the team to look for a trade, as he did a few weeks ago, when the communication gets fractured. And the only way that the communication gets fractured is when the team does not give a clear message to the player, or when the team gives conflicting messages to the player. I can't speak to why the Jets have decided to go down this path with Jamal Adams, because as you said, and you're absolutely correct, he is a captain because he is the emotional leader of the team. Nobody works harder than Jamal Adams. The guy has an incredible work ethic. He does not take for granted that he's the best player on the team, so it's not as if he's showing up late and leaving early. He is really a galvanizing force in that organization, in that locker room. Anybody who's been around him for 3 years will tell you that. Extremely emotional, regardless of what his social media presence is. I couldn't care less about that. But the reality is that he loves football, and he is about bringing everybody, offense, defense, young players, older players, together. And the idea of alienating that type of person in your building is really strange to me. But the reality is that over the past 6 months, for whatever reason, the organization has done that.
Well, to pry him away from the Jets, what do you think it would take? Would it be as simple as a first rounder? Would it be two first rounders, a first rounder and a player? What do you think, Manish?
Well, two first rounders would absolutely get it done. That being said, I would be stunned if any team offered two first round picks. Not because he's not an exceptional player, just because, you know, you don't get that kind of offer very often for non-quarterbacks. Now, obviously, it does happen. You saw the Jacksonville Jaguars get a great offer from the Rams a year ago, but it's rare. So if you set that part aside and assume that the Jets would not get two first-rounders, I think that Joe Douglas would need a first-rounder, another premium-round pick, so a second- or a third-round pick, and a younger player who could be a valuable contributor. Not necessarily a Pro Bowl player, but somebody who perhaps could develop into that type of player, or someone who could absolutely be a mainstay starter. So you're talking about two premium-round picks and a young player who can make a difference. That's a big haul, and again, I don't think the Jets would get that. But that's what I think it would take for Joe Douglas to even seriously consider trading Jamal Adams.
Manish, this story has been going on for a while, just in terms of his dissatisfaction with what's happening there. And fan bases will often suffer fatigue and be like, all right, he doesn't want to be here. Get that guy out of here. What do you think the reaction would be if they actually did pull off a trade? And you just said that's the best player on that entire roster. So would they welcome it at this point? Is there fatigue, or how do you think that would be received out there?
I think it's an interesting dynamic because not every Jet fan feels the exact same way. There's probably a division among Jet fans who are really active on social media, and then the vast majority of Jet fans who are either not on social media or, you know, they're casual observers. You know, the people who are on social media, they're very loud. I think it's a relatively small contingent of the entire fan base. But, again, you get a perception of Jamal Adams based on what he tweets or puts on Instagram. That has absolutely nothing to do with what kind of player and teammate he is and what he does for the franchise on and off the field. So I think that the prevailing sentiment would be disappointment if the Jets allowed a rare player like Jamal Adams to leave, because this is not a franchise that churns out stars. This is not Seattle. You don't have, you know, Richard Sherman, Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas. You don't have those types of players coming through the building very often. I think you can make a legitimate case that Jamal Adams is the best player that this franchise has had since Darrell Revis was in his heyday about, you know, 10 years ago. So it's been a long time. And again, this is a guy who produces. So it's not as if he's just a leader. This is a guy who actually delivers when it counts on game day. So I think a majority of the fan base would not be happy if they couldn't come to an agreement to keep this guy here long term. And as I said earlier, it's not simply about money. There are a lot of other factors. Communication, I think, is chief among them. There's also the head coach, which cannot be discounted. My understanding is that Jamal Adams is not particularly pleased playing for Adam Gase, and that has given him pause when considering whether he actually wants to be a part of this franchise long term, because Adam Gase is not a galvanizer. He's not a leader. He's really the antithesis, quite frankly, of Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll is the type of head coach, I think, that Jamal Adams would absolutely love playing for, and Pete Carroll's the type of guy who would love having Jamal Adams. I mean, those guys seem to have the right type of synergy, a similar type of synergy, but Adam Gase is, you know, not that type of person, not that type of leader, and quite frankly, not the type of head coach that Jamal Adams feels comfortable with.
Okay, yeah, and he's got those weird eyes too, Manish, so we're trying to work with us here, man.
Yeah, that aside, I think just from a leadership standpoint, I think Adams, as any young star would want, really likes stability. Stability in the organization, head coach on up. And I think what these last 6 months have taught Jamal Adams is that stability does not exist in this on this franchise as of right now.
Okay, real quick, we're up against a break here, but is there work with us here? Is there any chance that he could make himself so annoying to the Jets organization that they would actually, because we thought the same thing about Clowney last year. They ended up, you know, paying the Texans. We sent two players down there that weren't prime players, and then they ended up paying like $7 million of his $16 million contract. I'm just wondering if it, you know, because you start off, oh, we need a first and a second, but it just seems like the closer you get to camp and getting your roster together, the more likely teams are to, okay, let's just get rid of this guy, whatever we could get, and it seems like usually that goes down a little bit.
Well, look, they've got contractual control of Jamal Adams for at least 3 years when you factor in the $3.5 million this year, the fifth-year option for a little under $10 million next year. They could franchise him 2 more years. So they have contractual control in that sense, and they're not really paying him that much over the next 2 years. So I would be extremely surprised if the Jets, you know, had some kind of fire sale or had a discount just because they were annoyed with Adams. But that being said, the relationship has to be mended. It's fractured right now. The scenario you just laid out is the nuclear option. I don't think either side wants that, but I wouldn't necessarily rule that out either at this point.
Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News has been our guest here with Bob, Dave, and more. Manish, thanks so much for jumping on with us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
There you go. A little news coming out of New York. A couple of writers from the New York Daily News. Good stuff there. We'll continue our Mariners profile with a guy who's hard not to be excited about, especially after the show we put on today in the intra-squad game. We'll take a look at Kyle Lewis coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
An abbreviated edition of Bob, Dave, and More today. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll go over some things. Pete Carroll, who was a guest of the John Clayton Show, he had some things to say, so we'll let you hear what came out of that, in case you missed that conversation. Also, we've got mean texts. We didn't forget about you guys out there spitting venom at us throughout the week. We've been collecting some of your best shots. You still have time. You can text them into 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Just be creative. That's the only mandate, the only qualifier there. And we'll see what we can do to get your shot at us on the air. That comes up at the end of the show. Meanwhile, we've been breaking down a Mariners player every day so people can get familiar with them. And I think most people are familiar with Kyle Lewis at this point, who just started last season on a tear when he got up to the big leagues. He's hitting home runs left and right, and lo and behold, he hit a few today, guys. Did you get a chance to watch it, by the way? It was on YouTube. I don't know how many people out there had a chance to watch it. I know you could hear it, certainly, here on 710 ESPN Seattle. But Dave, Jim, did you guys get a chance to take a listen?
Yeah, I was watching.
Yeah, I watched a lot of it too, yeah, and I saw both of, and it was a little bit of a delay, and I think DePoto was in the booth when he hit the second one, because it looked like just almost like, well, I don't want to exaggerate, but almost like a check swing, and DePoto's comment was, yeah, I think he missed that one. Well, it went over the right field fence, so, and the first one went off of the, you know, the away
scoreboard.
Board out there, went off the top of it. So yeah, just it's fantastic watching that power and watch him run around out in the outfield. Seems like he's got good speed, got everything healthy now. He had that whole ACL thing after just 30 games in Everett. And I remember when we talked to him, he said, and this is one of the things that made me really like him and want to follow him, is that he said he wouldn't change that because it made him a better player. And I've always loved that about him, but he's just a great kid and just an awesome prospect. So it's so nice to see. I mean, I know it's a small sample size, but it's just nice to see you have all of these expectations for these young guys, but sometimes it takes a while. And for Kyle Lewis, man, it doesn't look like it's, I mean, look, it's early. And again, small sample size, but what, 10 games last year, he hit 6 home runs and had 2 today. So it just looks like he is a natural, and just he's like, during the commercial, they played a little thing. He's the guy I'm most excited to see, even ahead of Jared Kelenic and Julio Rodriguez and all of the great, you know, prospects they have. Kyle Lewis is the one I feel like is legit, and just can't wait to continue watching him.
Yeah, you know what's funny, Dave, is when you talk about the small sample size, okay, yeah, you're right. He was just up in September, but still, how many small sample sizes have we seen in the past from Mariner prospects that have come up and struggled in that small
Great
sample
point.
Size? So I just sit there and I go, okay, that's fantastic. Finally, a guy coming through. And, yeah, you're really pulling for Kyle Lewis ever since he had that knee injury up there in Everett and the comeback from that. And the thing I think, well, the number one thing I like about him, I like the high socks. I do. I love that when the players show those stirrups or whatever, the blue socks. I
doesn't
just think
take much to
faster.
Win Jim over.
They look cooler, and
socks.
I want to see more guys doing that, and I love it. With Kyle Lewis, how tall he is, boy, there's a lot of blue showing on his leg. But the tangible thing that I really like about him is his opposite field power. I mean, this guy doesn't just hit home runs to left and left center. Hey, he proved it again today. He hit that one. Dave Sims was saying, hey, I think his rear end was in the third base dugout when he hit that. So, I mean, you just love seeing that kind of power, and he looks like he's going to be a good outfielder too.
Yeah, for those that missed today's game, didn't get a chance to hear it or watch any of it on YouTube, J.P. Crawford led off with a home run. He hit a home run, and then here comes Kyle Lewis right after him.
Double-A Arkansas last year, Lewis hit .263, had 11 home runs, 62 runs batted in. But he made quite a splash when he got to the big leagues in September. The next pitch. Swing and a fly ball way back to left field. Looking up his lips, and this one is gone off the top of the out-of-town scoreboard. Kyle Lewis with a long home run way above the Mariners bullpen in left center field, and it's 2-0 Pilots.
Wait a minute.
He didn't say goodbye baseball.
Oh, my goodness.
Is it because it was an intra-squad game?
I don't know. Maybe he's not warmed up yet, Jim. He's still working the kinks out. It's summer.
Does he say that every time?
Yeah.
Every single time? Are you sure?
I actually don't know. I would bet money on it. He might.
I don't either.
He might. I don't pay close enough attention to know that he says it every time, but
I texted him during the game, and I was telling him how much I just loved hearing his voice and how it was just like making my whole day. So I'll text him and ask him if he says it every time.
Yeah.
How come you never text that to me and say that makes your day hearing my voice, Dave?
Because he doesn't like to lie, Jim.
I sent you an email the other day. Yeah. I sent you an email the other day saying that you made my day. So
okay. That's true.
Don't get used to it, by the way.
Yeah. He mashed that thing. That had steam on it. That was not like a floating, majestic, high shot that sort of floated for a while and then hit the – I mean, that was sort of a line drive off that out-of-town scoreboard. So he crushed it, and then, you know, one wasn't good enough. You got to do two.
Although some teams will be playing, as you kind of referenced earlier, some actual exhibition games. This is cranked out to right field, opposite away, and this is gone. It's a multi-homer game. Exhibition inter-squad style for Kyle Lewis as he is homered to left. He has now homered to right field, and he makes it 3-0 Pilots. My goodness.
How do you like that sound coming off the bat? That's one of the things that we might be able to hear better since there'll be no crowd. You'll hear that crack of the bat, and you hear when they just square it up.
Danny was talking about that the other day when I think there was that tweet out there of Kelenic's that crack, and you could hear Divis going, "Oh my God!"
Yeah.
But I agree with Danny that the crack of the bat, and Danny was also talking about metal baseball cleats on concrete. That sound, but that crack of the bat is just, and that's one of the cool things. I mean, you can hear that a lot better than you could with all of the fans there, right? So that's maybe one of the cool benefits that we were talking about of not having, you know, fans in the stands.
Yeah, excited about Kyle Lewis, 11th overall pick for the Mariners in 2016 out of Mercer University, who looks like he's slowly starting to live up to that billing that he had before suffering that knee injury. Had limited time last year but made the most of it, and good to see him go deep a couple of times in the intra-squad game today. So we'll continue to take a look at Mariner players as we get you set for the real season that'll start the 24th of this month for your Seattle Mariners. Coming up, Pete Carroll joined John Clayton today, and they discussed everything from the possibility of training camp getting pushed back to the, as Jim calls them, the cooking people. We'll let you hear what he had to say. Coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.